Hello, and welcome to the Commode Code, your comprehensive guide to restroom etiquette in the 21st century. I'm your host, Justin York, and I'm joined by my co-host, Peter Wyckoff.
Hey there.
Today, we're joined by our first in-studio guest and women's room correspondent, Arissa Johnsey.
Hello.
So this week, we have a couple of items of follow-up to open the show. The first is related to the Paris urinal situation, which we discussed on the last show, and it comes to us courtesy of Orlean Brendan, writing for the New York Times. If you'd like to follow along, the link is in the show notes in your podcast app or at commode.show/3. Dateline, August 30th, 2018. With tampons and concrete, vandals hit Paris urinals seen as sexist. We go to press. To some, the new street urinals in Paris are a mere eyesore, to say nothing of the men using them. To others, they are no less than an emblem of sexism, still more evidence that men's needs are put above women's. Now, protesters have taken concrete action. Vandals plugged up two of the urinals with cement and took the opportunity to festoon them with tampons and protest stickers aimed at men. "Are you a dog?" "No," said one. "Then why are you urinating in the street?" Another complained of a double standard. "Women who expose their breasts to breastfeed are asked to hide them," it said. "Men who take out their genitals to urinate are subsidized by City Hall." So what do you guys think about this new development in the Paris urinal scene?
I'm happy to see some positive actions taking place here to really even up the situation.
Yeah, I think we called out last week the sort of blatant sexism that's going on here and the fact that it doesn't really address the needs of women, you know, in any way. And they didn't expand other public restroom situations that we know of to help out with this.
I'd like to say that I don't know if their end goal, though, is to remove these urinals from the public spaces, or would we like to see a gender neutral unit installed in its place, usable by both sexes?
Yeah, I think unisex bathrooms are really the better way to go with these situations. I think they're just going with these urinals because they're lower cost, probably.
Yeah,
I kind of agree with that. I think the issue here is also that the sexism between women and having to not being able to breastfeed in public.
It's an interesting thing because that's a biological function that only takes place for women, basically for mothers. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, urination is something that everyone needs to do. So I think that's even more bizarre to me because you're catering specifically to the penis having portion of the population in these urinal situations. It's just even more discriminatory. I mean, personally, of course, I'm all for women breastfeeding in public. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I think, you know, all this like puritanical shaming that we have in our society is a problem, but it is sort of weird to compare them, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think about the mode of protest?
I, you know, destruction of property is, it's a tough sell. I'd rather see some more of the posters and the writing on it where it maybe just, you know, calls out some things, but filling it with concrete, tampons, whatever else was involved. I mean, that feels a bit excessive to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a little extreme. If I were to protest and I was a mother, I would gather all the mothers and breastfeed in public in front of these urinals.
Yeah, exactly. It's a weird, like I said, it's a weird conflation of the two things.
Yeah.
And like all the signs and stickers, I totally understand. But yeah, the cementing mm-hmm. over of the urinals themselves is a bit far.
Yep.
But it's very interesting.
Especially because I feel bad for the individual who doesn't realize it's been cemented over. Oh. He comes out, you know, it's 2 a.m. I've had maybe, I don't know, 2, maybe 17 beers. Walk over to the urinal and I, you know, just start going. Before I know it, it's the splashback is all over and, you know, we're done here.
It's an extreme splashback situation
really
at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what you, I mean, I guess you sort of deserve it for using a concreted over urinal, but it also then recreates the problem they were intended to solve, possibly mm-hmm. worse, which I guess actually sort of makes the protesters' point for them.
Sure.
Or I don't know if that's what they're going for, but
I just thought of a great idea. These protesters, instead of doing like a cement over and destroying the urinal, basically, they should have gone with a saran wrap over, the old classic prank, right? Where it's like, it's there, you get the splashback effect, you shame somebody, device is still usable.
How is it still usable? You have to poke a hole through the saran wrap?
Yeah, yeah. the wise individual will spot the saran wrap, come up and with some device like a stick, you know, poke a hole or remove it.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was this one interesting quote from a feminist activist who said, "I am well aware that men are the ones peeing in the street and that we have to fix that problem. But the street urinal," she said, "only further enshrine the idea that they are the ones who are legitimate in public spaces, not women." And like we talked about on the last episode, this was something that Paris realized in the late 1800s when they closed the pissoirs and moved over to like the gender neutral public restrooms, right? So it is one of those like history's repeating itself situations I find interesting.
I would like to ask another question, if I may. I've only spent limited time in Europe, but it's my understanding, and I believe I've seen it a few times, that in Europe, it's much more common to see somebody pulled over on the side of the road, man or woman, taking a bathroom break, if you will. Like, it's much more common than here in the States.
I don't have enough information to back that up.
I'm going to go ahead and do some research on this.
Okay.
And we'll follow up on the next episode.
Next time we might need a European consultant.
Oh, let's definitely bring somebody in on this.
All right. We have one other piece of follow-up, which actually comes from within the room. Arissa, I think you have some dissenting opinions about seat covers from what Peter expressed on last week's show.
Yes. So I believe that if you're pooping in public, I think that it's important to use a seat cover if there is one present for you, or TP to put it in the toilet bowl to prevent any splash and streaks in the toilet bowl.
This is a really interesting development that I'm not even prepared for. Toilet paper in the bowl to prevent the streaks.
Yeah.
This is fantastic.
This is news to me as
it
well.
It really is. I mean,
this is a brand new thought technology.
Like, I thought you were going to say TP on the seat, you know, build your own gasket if you need to. Everybody's familiar with this technology.
Yes.
The landing pad, if you will, of TP to prevent streaks. I really think I've just learned something amazing today.
So that's always necessary. Is the seat cover is necessary to use? If there's not one provided, do you construct the ersatz ass gasket out of TP?
It really depends. You do the observation that Peter suggested in the last episode, and if it's clean, there's no need for that seat cover. But if it looks a little, you know, there's a little bit of splash, I think that it's kind of important to have.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not as much of a disagreement as I initially thought, but it's more of an additional thought technology around what you do to prepare the bowl.
This is fantastic. I'm still blown away over here.
All right. So we'll add that to the checklist now to deploy a small piece of toilet paper into the bowl to serve as the landing zone. Our first new business this week also comes from Arissa, and it's around disposal of feminine hygiene products. So take it away.
Well, I think it's really important, whether you're in public or even in your own home or your friends, it's really important to wrap that tampon or that pad with some tissue paper so that whoever comes into the bathroom next doesn't see the mess in the toilet, or in not in the toilet, but in the garbage can.
Yes, thank you for the clarification on that one.
Yes, make sure to not deploy those into the toilet. They do not fare well with pipes, from what I understand.
Yeah.
There is a short horror story that I could go into at a later date about that, but yes.
Yeah, it can cause quite a clog situation. So, but yeah, basically it's all around. You want to make sure that you do a thorough wrapping.
Thorough wrapping enough so that there isn't any blood that you can see on the tampon / pad.
I don't know if we have any follow-up unless Peter actually wants to tell us that story.
No, I'm not going to go with that story just yet, but okay. I would like to ask, in my limited time in ladies' rooms, you know, it happens. I've seen sometimes there's a special disposal box for feminine hygiene products. Is that always the preferred method of disposal, or what happens? I don't know what that box is.
Yes. Yes. That is the preferred box to throw away your feminine hygiene.
Whatever.
Whatever. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So,
if that's not provided, you use the main trash of the restroom?
Yes.
Yeah.
You do not want to clog that toilet. Mm-hmm.
Right. No. But and you don't want to have to pack it out like you're camping. What?
I couldn't contain it. I was
How did that break you? That wasn't that out, funny.
Like, I can just imagine somebody packing it out of the restroom, taking it all the way home. Oh, okay.
You know, I was thinking about like the Japanese street trash situation where if you like finish a beverage, you're expected to carry the container until you reach a trash. Mm-hmm. And there are not a lot of trash cans in public.
Absolutely.
So the first time that you're going to see one is maybe at the train station and maybe not even then, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people just pack their trash and take it home.
That's fantastic.
And I haven't been to ladies' rooms in Japan, so I don't know what the feminine product disposal situation is there. I hope that they don't expect you to pack it out, but I do not completely know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really remember, but I believe there was a garbage can in there.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah, I'd like to also say, when it comes to hygiene and cleanliness, I'm a big fan of the Japanese and their culture.
Yes.
Basically, it's a leave no trace society.
Right.
They enter that restroom, they're going to leave it in the same shape, if not better, than when they were in there.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, it is extremely clean there. I have another thing to add. I think it's important that your bathroom at home contains some sort of garbage can for your guests, just in case, you know, any female friends come in and they might need to dispose of their tampon or pads.
Now, does that trash can need to be lidded? Is it preferably lidded, or is it okay to be an open one? Because we're an open trash can house around here, but I know that when you have these disposal bins, they're generally a lidded affair.
I think it's fine to have it open, but that's why I bring the point of it's really important to wrap that tampon and pad because, you know, there's cases where it's going to be open. But if you have animals in the house, it might be preferred to have it
yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Closed.
Yeah.
Interesting, interesting. Okay, I think we're going to move on to our next topic now, which sort of glomps on to the pooping at work series we began last week. I just want to kind of talk about stall selection in a multi-stall environment.
Fantastic, yeah. So first, let's say we're at the workplace. And the reason I'm differentiating the workplace from public places is because usually in all of the stall selection algorithms, you have to factor in the handicap stall.
Yes.
Now, at the workplace, you might be very well aware of everybody who works there if it's a small enough company, and you might know if anybody's in need of using that special stall. Now, let's say, for example, nobody in your workplace requires that stall. Some people would ask, when I first enter the restroom, is that my first go-to choice? It's got the leg room, it's got the arm room, might have a slightly higher seat, you know, it's more comfortable. Might have an LCD in there. Who knows what else?
Could have a bespoke sink as well.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
So generally, though, what I'm saying is my algorithm has to take that into account. Obviously, if I'm at a public place, my go-to stall is not the handicap stall. And I'd like to emphasize that for our listeners.
Yeah.
You're in the airport. You don't go right for that one. Now, if it's an absolute emergency situation, like we have something imminent, we're going to have an emergency explosion. And the only thing available happens to be that ADA stall, I'm going to go ahead and give you the green light, but please expedite your business while you're in there. Nobody's lingering in there. There's no stall gaming. I don't want to hear your phone clicking away while you're playing Bejeweled, whatever's on there.
We have something related to that coming up a little later in the show. So that's
fantastic.
A good teaser
around
the stall gaming. But I agree.
Yeah.
You know, especially like you said, if there's an imminent situation.
Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. I mean, it's an emergency case here. But let's go ahead and say you walk into the restroom. You've got two normal stalls and one handicap stall. All are free. Now, it might be like, oh, just take one of the two normal stalls. That's not correct. That's not the answer.
No?
No. Because one of those stalls is probably adjacent to a urinal.
Okay.
Urinals might be empty at the moment, but they're visited frequently throughout the day. Do you really want, like, the person standing right next to you, tapping shoes, almost with your shoes while you're in the stall? No. So you obviously go mid on that situation. You go right in the middle. You got the privacy. Now, that's assuming nobody's in left or right.
Right. And assuming that the ADA is far.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. If you're in the mid and you have empty neighbors, you're good to go. But if you go in there and somebody's already in, let's say, normal stall next to the urinals, now your choice is between mid and handicap. first class, I like to call it. This is where you've got to ask yourself, is there anybody in the workforce that needs that stall? And they say no. If the answer is no, I'm going into that ADA stall because I want that buffer stall between me and the neighbor.
No, so that's why I think it's interesting that you take the middle up first, because then you don't have the possibility of a buffer.
That is correct.
Yeah.
But it was out of courtesy, because I did not want to take the ADA stall just by default in that case. I guess if you're 100% sure that it's not going to be required, maybe you go first class right off the bat.
So is the ideal layout for a three-stall restroom with one accessible stall to have the accessible stall in the middle?
Ooh, interesting. You never see that.
Oh, I have.
Really? Accessible in the middle?
Yes.
That would be perfect, because then you 90% of the time will have a good buffer there between... And even if there's somebody in that ADA stall, it's wide enough that you get a decent buffer if you're next to them. It's kind of in direct contrast with your urinal selection algorithm, which would definitely tell you not to take the middle urinal by default, which is a power move also done by narcissists that we often see, where somebody just stands right there, spreads the feet wide. They know they're going to be like right next to somebody no matter who shows up. You always go left or right or up against a wall if you can. But in the stall situation, like I said, I would go mid before I go next to urinal, because I don't want the neighbor right there hearing the noises, you know, like we're both hearing each other. That person might, you know, be firing off some things at the urinal. They might be hearing me doing the courtesy flush. They might see my name tag hanging there if I failed that checkpoint. So, I mean, there's all sorts of problems that can happen when you go next to somebody.
Now, in a situation like a ladies' room or a gender-neutral restroom where there are no urinals, what's your preferred there? Do you go close to door, far from door? I assume you're going for an outer stall, right?
Yeah, I like to go outer for sure. Just getting away as far as possible from the public in these situations is my goal. The other thing to mention is, like you just brought up, is if you have the option of an executive suite, single units, you know, bathroom in your workplace, you might want to seek that out. Sometimes it's often in high demand, but like at my current workplace, we have normal restrooms, and then further down in the building, we have two individual units where you can really get some privacy. They're gender neutral, but you're in there, you've got your own locked door, you've got a, you know, a suite of refreshments in there. You can, you know, shave. They have razors, Q-tips, everything you could possibly want. Can really
totally set
there.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah,
are you guys not set up like that in the regular shared?
I mean, they have the accoutrements, but it's like you don't want to be that guy in there Q-tipping in front of people, right?
Right.
So in these private restrooms, I mean, you can hang out there for a good half an hour, 45 minutes, you know, bring your laptop, do what you need to do.
So regarding the questions for female bathrooms, I think that we generally will go to the furthest stall as well. And like Peter said, if this is a workplace and you know your coworkers and you know that there's no one that needs that handicapped stall, that's kind of the preferred stall to go to when you're pooping at work.
Okay. So you will actually prioritize the accessible first class stall.
That sounds like a great idea as well. I'm happy to hear that the kind of the similar algorithm works for both genders. While we're, you know, on the subject of just kind of being at work and in the stalls, could we kind of quickly revisit how much conversation happens in the ladies' room across the stall barrier? Because we talked about this in the men's room. It's kind of the stall barrier is somewhat sacred. You don't violate it unless there's a skip level situation.
Right. That was week one's topic. Yes.
Do they go in the restroom together and shut the doors and the conversation continues?
Yes. I think it's less weird to continue the conversation when you go into the stall, because a lot of times people aren't. I think for men, when they're going to the stall, it's obvious as to what they're doing in that stall. But for females, a lot of times it's going number one rather than number two.
Right.
Gotcha. But that could get awkward. That could get awkward in there, I'd imagine. Like if, you know, you enter the restroom with a coworker, you're having a good conversation, you enter the stalls, conversation's continuing, and then
Someone has a bowel situation,
or, you know, just firing off some gas, whatever happens in there. But it's like, then it gets a whole nother topic of, do you acknowledge what just happened? Do we have a laugh about it? Or do we go silent? Do I, you know, never talk to this person again because I'm humiliated at what just happened? And I mean,
this is why my rule exists, remain silent.
Yes. Silence is key in the men's room.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely prefer if the other person doesn't talk to me between each stall because of that situation. But if someone was talking to you and you both go into the stall and you really have to go number two, if you can, try to hold it and then leave and go to a different restroom.
This is fantastic. This is exactly what I was hoping to hear, because that is a technique I would agree with 100%. Yeah. You go in with a fake, or, you know, and then it's like,
the fake.
Yeah. No, hey, this is fun. It was quick conversation. We both went in. There was a tinkle. Now we'll see you later. And then you circle back, take care of business. That's exactly what I would do as well.
Yeah.
Because it's similar in the men's room. If you ever see somebody pull up at the urinal and then realize they've got a situation, oftentimes it's really awkward if you see them like move from urinal to stall. Like, what just happened?
Yeah, the redirection. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But that person could wrap it up the urinal, leave, do the 30-second count, 10 Mississippi, whatever works for them, back in. Nobody's none the wiser.
I think a good technique is if you're walking in together into the restroom, pretend that you're just going in there to wash your hands or whatever, and then go right back out.
Mm-hmm. Just a quick freshen up.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I like it.
That does bring up, you brought up redirections now. You specifically brought up the urinal to stall redirection, which I think would be the most likely necessary.
Yes.
Have you ever encountered the stall to urinal redirection?
No, I definitely have never encountered the stall to urinal redirection. That would be somewhat amazing, but that does quickly remind me of a fantastic incident that I did not get to witness, unfortunately, but it was relayed to me secondhand. But I have 100% faith in the person who told me the story that it happened. 100%. Person's in the restroom, uses the urinal. Somebody's in the stall. Person from the urinal goes over to the sink, is washing hands. Person at the sink hears a flush from the stall. Individual from the stall comes out, joins them at adjacent sink, grabs some like paper towel, moistens it, makes eye contact in the mirror, and then retreats back into the stall.
Now, I mean, the thing I have the most problem with here is the eye contact.
Absolutely.
That is completely unnecessary in this situation.
100%. No words exchanged. And this is at a work situation, too, where these people will see each other again. It's one thing if you're at the concert, you're like, hey, I got to come out and get some paper for a cleanup or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're going to see this person again, wouldn't you wait until the individual at the sink has left before coming out of a stall to get moistened paper to take back into the stall?
I think so.
But this was one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard.
Yeah, just a stall-to-stall redirection. I hadn't even considered that possibility.
Stall-to-stall redirection with awkward eye contact. I mean, it violates so many rules, but it happened.
I think the stall-to-urinal situation could be one of those great like Psych 101 experiments that, you know, a college student goes in. You know, one of the classic ones is you get in the elevator and you just stay facing the back, right?
Yeah.
One of the favorite ones I ever heard of was you go into like a counter service deli, you order a sandwich, you sit down, you eat half of it, then you leave, then you have an accomplice come in, sit down at your sandwich and finish it.
Oh, nice.
And I think this could be a similar situation where you just kind of go into the stall, you hang out for a while, you're not really doing any business. But then you come out when you know someone's at the urinal, you pull up next to them. So they know you came from the stall to the urinal and you just see how they react. I think this could be a lot of fun, actually.
This is opening up a whole series of ideas I'm having. It's around stall magician tricks and things like this, but it's a great idea. Just see what people do.
Yeah, we should probably do some field reporting on
this. I like this.
Yeah. Continuing on the pooping at work series, what do y'all think about bringing an odor control device like Poopery or One Drop or another device into the stall with you?
I think it's a great idea. That's a best case situation, is to have some sort of Poopery. I personally like Poopery. I don't know if you guys have used it before.
Yes, I have. I've seen the product. I've never personally brought it in myself, but at some of our restrooms, the odor control device was already in the stall.
That's actually a very nice thing to stock for a workplace. I think that's actually going to see a lot more use than, you know, your razors, your toothbrushes, right?
I would hope so.
What I've seen before is just the can of Glade in the workplace, and that, I think, is much worse, right?
Yeah.
A mix of smells between the glaze and whatever else.
Yeah, I mean, we use the One Drop product in this household, mm-hmm. which is similar to the Poo-Pourri, but we find that, you know, it is more of an elimination than a cover-up or a better combination than a Glade or a typical spray would be.
Exactly. Firing off the Glade in the restroom is, it doesn't cover up anything. It's just kind of like sprinkling sugar on something gross. Like it's just
like
it's a
what,
bad combo.
Sprinkling sugar on what you just left
it could
in
be.
The toilet.
Yeah. Sprinkle sugar on a turd. It's still just a turd, but it's like, yeah.
So would you recommend if a Glade or other aerosol air fresheners provided to not use it whatsoever, or is it situational?
No, I would probably still be under the impression that I would fire a couple of courtesy squirts out of that thing just to fire something into the air. In fact, to circle back to the executive stalls I was talking about, they do not have any of these products in them currently, but for whatever reason they have a can of Old Spice deodorant spray sitting in there. So then I've often thought to myself, well, I mean, it's got a decent fan in there as well.
Right.
But out of courtesy, because there could be somebody waiting on the outside of that door and you don't know. It's the moment you open that door, you're finding out if somebody's coming in right after you. So the question is, I've got Old Spice. That's the only thing in here that's going to mask any sort of odors. Do I fire off a little Old Spice before I leave?
Now, if you do fire it off, are you just going to fire it into the air or are you actually just going to apply it?
I am absolutely going to fire it into the air. I'm not going to apply it. Yeah, I'm not a big Old Spice on the body kind of guy. But if that's your brand, double whammy, right? You can just touch up the, you know, your body odor at the same time you're freshening up the stall. Great idea.
Yeah, you don't want to smell different than when you entered in.
Yeah, that would be interesting. You come out with a whole new,
new thing.
Yeah, make it back to your desk. People are like, wow, guy just really freshened up in there.
So it would be nice if each of those executive stalls had a different scent. And then throughout the day, you could track how many times someone visited by how much their scent changed.
That's fantastic. I like the idea.
Yeah, you just rotate through. All right. So I think that covers our pooping at work topics for the week. Now it's time for our deuces and don'ts segment, where we adjudicate your restroom encounters and answer your burning questions. Our first question this week comes from listener Burton. Burton asks, how long is too long to sit on the throne at work? And he follows up with, any strategies for regaining feeling in your feet before exiting the stall?
Well, I know that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, my husband.
Yes. Do you have any concerns about the fact that he's staying in the stall for so long that he's losing feeling in his feet?
Well, no. For one, I do know that when he does go to the restroom, he can take a really long time.
Okay. So it's not out of character from your understanding of him.
Yes.
Right.
But it's also, I think it is kind of common to, I think it's easy to lose feeling from your feet if you've been sitting there for, even if it's not that long.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In a low blood pressure situation, you could quickly lose feeling in your extremities.
That's true.
But for me, I kind of use that as an indicator that I've been on way too long.
Oh, that's your timer.
That is like you have critically passed the timer and it's now we're deep into the red zone. Like if you're still on there and it's all of a sudden you've got numbness in the extremities, it's like you really got to ask yourself, what have you been doing for the last 25 minutes? I mean, hopefully you're not watching a Netflix in there. I mean, again, this goes back to also like if you're in the workplace, are you wearing identifying footwear? Because if you're wearing the yellow Nikes, and I see you in there and I come back 20 minutes later to take another whiz and I still see the yellow Nikes in that stall, we've got a problem. You're now on the list.
So how long is too long? That's the main question we're looking at.
I mean, it's a tough question, right? I don't want to presume to understand everybody's bowel habits and there's some medical conditions that might keep you in there longer than, you know, the other person.
Right.
Like I've mentioned in the past, I'm super envious of the people who are just like a drop and run. Like they can be in and out in like a minute. I don't even understand this concept, but.
So it involves eating fiber, having fiber in your diet.
I'm just saying. Doesn't work for everybody. However, if you find yourself in there, I'd say like max 10 minutes and 10 minutes is incredibly long.
Okay.
I mean, it's like you think to yourself, oh, 10 minutes, that's not that long, but really. Try it one time. Put a stopwatch on. see what 10 minutes really feels like. I mean, you can get a lot done in that time.
Yeah. Something I've actually been really interested in is if someone had been running these stopwatch trials mm-hmm. for years and years, like how much it would have changed over the past decade.
Sure.
Because I think the iPhone really changed the way a lot of people poop.
Absolutely.
And as smartphones have gotten ubiquitous, yeah. I think people spend more time in the stalls now.
Do you remember the good old days when you'd see somebody curl up a newspaper under their arm at work and head into the stall? I mean, this we're talking years ago, but right. it's like that was a thing. Or a magazine
yeah.
at work. I mean, at home, sure, whatever. But it's like at work, watching somebody enter the restroom carrying a reading magazine, paper, book, anything. It's like amazing that that used to happen.
I mean, I can see it with a magazine or a newspaper.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you're bringing a novel in there. No. Like, how many chapters are you going to get through? It's going to be a long time
sure.
if you're there with a book. You don't want to have a hardcover in there because then, oh, you know, goodness. It's going to get moist.
Yeah. You could risk injury there, too, with a drop situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, like, yeah, as you said, with the advent of the smartphone, I would love to see the studies, and I think I've seen a few articles, but we should circle back on this as to like workplace productivity lost to people in the bathroom. Like I know some employers, more of the big businesses, not kind of the high tech, have like actually put limits on their restroom time because they right. had the situation where people were like literally ducking out of work for a half an hour at a time to go sit in the restroom. That was their like quick out.
Yeah, I mean, I think famously Amazon and fulfillment centers has sort of a limit mm-hmm. on bathroom breaks. And one of the common complaints is that it takes so long to get to the restroom and back that you don't really have time in there to do your business.
No, that's horrible.
Which is really bad.
Yeah.
But it is one of those interesting points to to consider where these businesses have felt the need
right.
to institute this because some of us are spending way too long in those stalls. Mm-hmm. You get your Candy Crush going.
Oh, my goodness.
You keep beating those levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder how they enforce that, though. Is there a card key situation where you have to, like, swipe out of your job and, like, for specifically for bathroom break? Or
I honestly have no idea if
that
you're
would just be
punching in and out.
It feels kind of like an invasion of privacy at some point where I have to like swipe every time I'm going to the can.
Yeah, and they know exactly how long you've been mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And someone, your manager, their boss is looking at the reports of everyone's productivity. And
that'd be fantastic, actually, to get that the TPS report that's broken down by time in restroom versus other, you know, metrics at work.
Yeah. Sounds like a terrible capitalist hellscape.
Yeah, you don't want that coming up at your review.
No, I yeah. don't think you do.
Well, you did great work, Bob, except I'm seeing maybe an extra couple hours a month in the restroom.
Oh, all right. So let's go on to the second part of the question. Do you have any strategies for regaining feeling in your feet? Personally, I don't really have the problem of my feet going to sleep, so I don't think I have much to add in this situation. Mm-hmm.
This is where you could start bringing in some of the stall yoga techniques that I'd like to talk about in the future. But just a quick overview here. It's similar when you're on a long flight. I mean, you want to do what you can to stay limber. You kind of want to do some moves where you clench the calf muscles, relax the calf muscles, stretch out the toes, you know, kind of try to like take some gravity off the seat area if you can. Basically, you don't want to just sit motionless for the entire time. That's where the circulation gets cut off.
So I don't know if this is true, but my understanding is that the losing feeling from your legs for sitting on the throne for too long might be due to some nerve issue related.
Mm-hmm.
Pinching.
Yeah, if you're pinching a nerve, exactly. It could be. Yeah, again, I think like it could be a circulation issue or it could be a nerve pinch.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, like doing what you can to kind of adjust your seated position throughout the time you're in there would help. Like, just don't stay stationary the entire time, putting all the pressure on the same points.
Right. Alter your posture as you go.
Yeah. I'd like to hope that in the future, some of the ergo practices we use in the office could actually be, you know, used in the stall as well. Like, maybe you could get an evaluation or something, have somebody come in, coach you on your posture.
Get a special seat cover.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great idea right there.
Yeah, instead of just the paper cover, everyone has their personal little molded plastic cover where it hugs you perfectly that you put on top of the seat.
I think we could really, that's a business opportunity waiting to happen right there.
All right, everyone, patent pending. Mm-hmm. Please don't steal my idea.
On a related thing, has anyone here used Squatty Potties?
I have not used a Squatty Potty so far.
I have not used a Squatty Potty either. However, I've been camping my whole life, so I'm familiar with the technique of the Squatty Potty, and I'm a big believer in it. It's a great idea. It makes me want to bring up this one story. There was an individual at one of my previous jobs. We called him the Stall Ninja because one day I was in there and the bathroom stall was closed, locked. We thought it was out of order, but then we heard a flush from within that bathroom. Later, found out that this individual always does the technique where he has feet on the toilet seat in a squatted position into the bowl, which, as Squatty Potty would tell you, is actually the natural position for eliminating one's bowels. However, I'd never seen an individual do this at work.
Right, on a Western-style toilet.
That's Western-style toilet, correct. Yeah. I mean, obviously, yes, in other countries, there's the squat toilet.
Yeah.
Correct. But this individual had learned the benefit of the squat position and had brought it to the Western toilet.
That is impressive, especially without using an assistive device like the Squatty Potty.
That'd be fantastic if he actually founded Squatty Potty. Full circle there, but I doubt it. But like, yeah.
Have you, Arissa, used the Squatty Potty?
Yeah. And I think it might be helpful for when your legs go numb. Just in being in that position, I think it might help with that pressure that's... Mm-hmm.
Well, because you're keeping your legs a little more engaged in the process,
right? I think so.
By having them sort of squished up. Oh, it's a good note. So maybe bring your own Squatty Potty. Although that brings us into the whole other situation of bringing your own accompaniments that are larger than, you know, something like a poopery you can bring in a handbag or a pocket.
Right.
Squatty Potty, I don't know what kind of handbag you're carrying that you're going to fit a Squatty Potty in.
Backpack.
Yeah.
No, I think the rule there is that if you're carrying anything that somebody can see you carrying, again, especially in the workplace, this is making you stand out as an individual who, you know, has some special circumstances around their bowel habits, and that's not always ideal.
Okay, so let's move on to our second question, which comes from an anonymous listener. They present the following scenario. You're in a workplace which doesn't have quote-unquote atomic toilets. You cause a plug. There's no plunging equipment nearby. What's the etiquette here in both A, an empty bathroom, and B, one with a person waiting to use the stall you were in?
Mm-hmm.
Now, B is like the worst case situation that you can have in any scenario, right?
I believe it is. I mean, you really have to deal with that head on. I mean, there's no getting around it. You can't just walk by that person and just say, oh, I'll deal with it later. I mean, they're going to know what happened. So, I mean, at that point, you should come out, should really own up to the situation.
Yeah.
I mean, you can blame it on a previous occupant. It doesn't have to be you that destroyed the toilet. I mean, you could look that person in the eye and say, hey, you know, I tried to flush. It just didn't work. I think the toilet's broken. I'm going to go ahead and say, don't go in there. It's really bad.
Then that person's going to say, you were there for 5 minutes.
Hey, you just say, hey, I apparently didn't do my pre-flush checklist like
right.
I was instructed. So I didn't realize that we were already in a stuck situation. So, I mean, but at that point, you have to own up to it. You
yes.
can't just walk by, let that individual go in there and see the damage.
And you have to be straight on about that it's a plug situation. You can't just do like a Friday reference. I would not go in there for another 35, 40 minutes.
You could try that. I would just say that the toilet is not working.
Yeah.
Might not indicate whether or not it's plugged, the flush mechanism broke, you know, whatever, but like whatever you can to keep that person out of there.
Okay.
Like, yeah. You don't want eye contact and them going in there at the same time. It's.
I think I would feel really bad though if there wasn't anyone in the restroom. You leave to go find help and then you come back or whatever. The person goes and sees the mess that was made
mm-hmm.
in that stall.
Yeah. So do you leave a note in the empty restroom situation?
So usually on the stall door, on the outside of the stall door, there's no knob, but there's a flathead or slot head, if you will, screwdriver type way you can lock the door. This is why you should always carry a coin or a screwdriver or Leatherman product in your pocket. You never know what's going to happen in the restroom, but let's say you destroy the bathroom, doesn't flush anymore. You exit that stall from the outside, you lock the stall. Now, anybody coming in, because you probably don't have paper and a pen, right? You're not going to quickly be able to scrawl a note and tape. Who has tape in the restroom? So anyway, you lock the door, then you get out and you alert authorities immediately. I mean, this might be like, you know, if you have a janitorial alias on the email, or if you know who's your facilities crew at work, you could just, and then again, you can just say, hey, I went in there. It was already destroyed. Somebody's got to fix this.
Or if you know where plunging equipment is, you can return to deal with the situation yourself.
Sure. Yet I've never seen plunging equipment in my office. So like, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I would prefer to be able to try to solve my own problem before bringing in help. But yeah, I've never seen it there.
Okay. I have nothing to add to the locking the stall method, which is
a new. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's a new thought technology to me.
Carry a coin or a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always handy.
Okay. So that's it for this week's episode of the Commode Code. Show notes for this week are at commode.show/3. The show's on Twitter and Facebook as Commode Code. You can find me on Twitter at BangFalse, BangFalse. Peter's on Twitter at The Mad Crapper. Arissa's on Twitter at AsiraWR. Our music is by Audionautix.com. Please help us out by reviewing us on Apple Podcasts or giving us a star in Overcast. If any of your friends might like this sort of thing, please recommend the show to them. We'll be back again next fortnight.